For September the 12th, 2014, we talk about the new 3DS, Five Nights at Freddy's, and we ask you about your favorite genre-bending games. Welcome to the 75th level. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
Your Davidmon has digivolved into a Jollimon!
Yay!
Yay!
I'm Ben Merkel.
kind of disrupting the flow there, Joll.
No, it's good. I can't top it.
Yeah, I know. I decide what's good, Ben.
Never mind. Sorry.
No, I'm just being a dick. Welcome to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. David couldn't join us because, to quote his text, it's getting crazy over here.
Which probably means he's fighting a war with Russia right now.
War games,
Like Ben Horn in season 2 of Twin Peaks. They're just reenacting the Bolshevik Rebellion. Oh no. Man, that's a deep Twin Peaks cut. Mm-hmm. This is episode number 75, guys. Do you guys know what the material is for the 75th anniversary?
Coffin.
It's funny you should say that. So this was my way in. It's a gold diamond, which is a color of diamond. I don't know how it's distinct from a yellow diamond, which I think is one of these up here. Or a pearl diamond, which comes later.
Or a Neil diamond.
Yes. Oh. Well, yeah. Diamond solitary man. There's a whole big table on Wikipedia, and I kind of want to hit at least one of these. Apparently, they've accounted for the possibility of a 90th anniversary.
Whoa.
Yeah. So. And they have these divided off into traditional US, traditional UK, and then a suggested modern gift list created by late librarians at the Chicago Public Library. I don't know what makes them an authority.
Yeah.
But the gift for 90th birthday, the US and UK traditional is stone.
Oh God.
Yeah. Pretty grim. And the suggested gift is engraved marble, comma, granite. So here's a tombstone.
Wow. Die, you motherfucker.
Yeah, a shovel.
I will outlive you.
It's a shovel with which you will dig a hole. And then the suggested gift for the 17th anniversary is furniture, because that couch is getting ratty.
Interesting. It's funny you bring that up. This is just really natural segue. Now that I've called it out, I missed last week because it was my third wedding anniversary, and the gift for that is leather.
Yeah.
No, don't go there.
It's when you start experimenting with kink.
Oh yeah. Yeah. But no, Jen got me a pair of leather Converses that are very, very rare. And Ben and Cole will remember, everyone wore Converses at my wedding. It's kind of a brand that I really like. And she managed to find these ultra rare ones that are, all leather, and give those to me. So it was really cool. Yeah. I got her a Michael Kors purse. Which went over well. But yeah, so that's why I was gone last week. Jala, thank you for stepping in. I'm glad to hear your voice so often on the show. It's kind of cool.
Yeah.
There was one guy on Twitter who was like, "You're awesome. Hooray." And I was like, "Oh, yay. Somebody thought I was awesome." That's
more guys on Twitter than I've gotten, so you should feel good.
Hey, I bug you on Twitter all the time. Don't give me that.
It's true.
Yeah. Well, I hate to say this because it's going to sound like I'm endorsing tokenism or whatever. Like, lol, we got a lady on here. We made that joke on the first episode. But I feel like as somebody who operates this network, it's kind of a failing that we haven't had, female voices represented. So it actually is really cool to have you here. So thank you, Jala, for being game to step in.
Hooray. Yeah, I just, like I was telling him, I'm like, well, whenever they just can't make it for whatever reason, I guess I'll just be on call. So yeah. I'm kind of like when that awesome party member in your little RPG that you're playing of life, mm-hmm. when that party member gets kidnapped or something and is no longer in your party and you're like, damn, what do I do? Like, I'm that item in your inventory that you have to use that is not used the rest of the time, but it's just like there for this one situation. Yeah, that's me.
Yeah, we need to cast lightning. So we have to, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm looking at this here. Next next year, you're going to get either linen or silk, which is nice. Or the Chicago gift says appliances, parentheses, electrical.
Boo. Well, every other year we've done some form of travel associated with it. So like year two is cotton, and we went to the land of cotton, which is basically anywhere in the general South. So that was fun.
I was going to say, is that like a theme park? Because I really need to see it. Are there sheep there?
Yeah.
I
want
to know.
It's like, super, super racist.
Wait a minute. Can we rewind? Do you think cotton comes from sheep, Jala?
I am throwing out all different kinds of animals in my brain.
However many fluffy
cute
animals
I can think of.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's hard.
I went to a comic and RPG meetup for ladies, a ladies' night. Hooray! And they had ladies there who made goat soap. It was exciting.
What?
Goat milk soap.
Goat milk soap.
Oh, so it's goat milk fat that is rendered into soap. Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah. And so but the thing is, their little, reason why they are there is because they named all of their soaps after different characters from comics, movies, games, that kind of thing. Yeah. So
every year at the Portland Retro Games Expo, we are situated across from and by every year, I mean both years previously, a booth that sells bars of soap that are shaped like video game cartridges.
Huh.
And like, you know, scented to smell like it. So like the Donkey Kong 64 smells like terrible games. No, it's it smells like banana. But one of their default scents, and these are very nice people, so I hate to like, you know, to throw a shade or whatever. One of their default scents is Mountain Dew.
Oh,
okay.
Which like I can understand, you know, like a peppermint, hand soap. In fact, I use a peppermint hand soap because that is a very soothing. Very soothing scent. I don't associate Mountain Dew with cleanliness.
No, I guarantee you that's not licensed, so they're sticking it to the man.
Okay.
Makes it all better.
Yeah, no, it's Moon Mist. They got an endorsement deal from Faygo.
But about the cotton and the sheep, I just imagined that there could be this little espionage game with sheep in the cotton because they would blend in.
Oh.
They would.
Yeah.
It would be neat.
They're out there trying to end injustice.
If they have a goat simulator, they should have sheep in a cotton field. It would be fun.
If you give them jetpacks, they could go into the clouds.
Oh my God, that's exciting!
God, I'm going to have to edit all this out.
Protect our IP.
Yeah, sheep simulator coming April Fool's Day, 2015.
Don't tempt me. I might draw it.
So we've fucked around enough. What do we have?
Okay. That's go.
No. I like having that little banter section at the beginning, but you know, shows have been running long, and I've got to, you know, got to crack the whip. Yeah. High five, buddy.
A sound effects riddled episode.
Yeah,
of the level.
Yeah. The soundboard broke, so we're just doing mouth foley.
We're gonna be like William H. Macy and Seabiscuit.
Yeah. So what do we have in store for you? We've got the usual roundup, the brief where we talk about news. We have a multiplayer about stepping out of our comfort zone vis-a-vis game genres, or games stepping out of their genre comfort zone. And then rounding it out with our usual grind. Let's go. Anybody have a story they want to volunteer?
I put one in the robot.
Yes, you did.
When we say that, I had to figure out from context what that meant. That meant we typed it into Skype.
Yes.
But this one I thought was pretty cool. So we're all familiar with Kerbal Space Program.
Yes.
It was recently covered on Check It Out, Comrade. So you should check that out.
I like the way you say that. Can you say that again?
What, Kerbal?
No. Check It Out, Comrade.
Check It Out, Comrade.
Okay, cool.
Check It Out, Comrade.
Yes.
I have no idea what accent that was. Anyway.
think of it had been Dracula.
I was going to say that was kind of Transylvanian.
The Transylvanian Army is a proud, proud unit. They kind of have found, and they being enthusiasts of Kerbal Space Program, have found kind of a bit of an exploit in that the program does not yet take into account atmosphere for reentry. Meaning, whereas, you know, normal scenarios where a real spaceship would just burn up, they can actually do without incident, which has started a new kind of space race where the challenge, and I have to look up who initially issued it, it's a YouTuber, Scott Manley, issued the challenge to get to the edge of space, by meaning kind of to the edge of Earth's atmosphere, and back down to Earth as fast as possible, which has just spawned all these crazy, crazy rocket creations that are basically designed to fly up as fast as possible and then rocket you down as fast as possible. So fastest time to date, I think, is 2 minutes and 35 seconds. Mm-hmm. Which is a feat. That's pretty incredible.
Yeah. Kerbal Space Program is a very, very deliberately paced game.
Yeah. And it's just cool. I mean, it, kind of the Check It Out, Comrade episode talked about just kind of what a sandbox it is and how it's really just very, very kind of tool dense and feature dense without mm-hmm. too much objectives or game to it.
Mm-hmm. It's a failure simulator.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just cool to see the community kind of coming up with their own goals and their own challenges. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's a cool thing.
Yeah, that is that is definitely cool. This is the first time I've seen Kerbal in the news for a while. That is a game I desperately wish I understood or could play better.
It's like me looking at like stock market traders being like, I wish I was good at that.
Yeah, except yours could actually benefit life.
You know, hey, the thing you say is, that, and then we're going to have to all leave Earth to avoid the apocalypse, and the Kerbal people will be like, yes, my time has come.
Well, you know, the thing about it is that all the people I know that play that game have played like 300 hours of it. They are really, really into it. I don't see anybody who's played it for 15 or something like that. It's a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's binary.
Yeah. But more than any other game that I am aware of right now, it predicates itself on kind of amassing this knowledge base in yourself. Like, you're actually like learning these principles that are kind of, you know, forgive my word choice here, entirely alien to most of us, right?
Yeah, and that's I always think it's cool, like, you know. There's value in just learning how to learn and practicing learning, even if it's useless knowledge that you're never going to actually directly apply. A game like this that causes you to think and causes you to go through the process of learning is super cool.
Yeah.
Like Portal.
Yeah.
Sure.
Man.
What streak are we on for mentioning Portal every single episode?
I think Ben's made it his mission. Yeah.
Yeah. So
that's a good story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'll go with one that is kind of maybe a little bit outdated insofar as I think the news came out right after we, recorded the previous episode. But bears mentioning, Nintendo came out and announced that there is going to be a new 3DS, specifically mm-hmm. two new 3DSs, the regular, like the compact size and the extra large size. Kind of making this one of the biggest kind of mid-generation upgrades that they've ever really done to any of their handhelds, especially, right? So previously, any upgrades to their handheld lines have been like, okay, let's step from the Game Boy to the Game Boy Pocket, from the Game Boy Advance to the Game Boy Advance SP. You could maybe argue that the Game Boy Color was a little bit like this, insofar as there were certain games that would work on one and not the other. But this just seems kind of strange. So it doesn't really have a name right now. Mm-hmm. It's just the new Nintendo 3DS, which seems like a real trap to get into. And just imagining what kind of nightmare that's going to be for specifically parents, but also the people who have to sell these systems to parents. Like, okay, it's the new 3DS that will play the old games but these particular games are not going to. It's like there was a small run of the on the Nintendo DSi of games that required the camera. parents would be like furious when they bought one of those like one or two games, which are always like Imagine Party Babies and Imagine Hangover Babies and all of that. You know, that require that. I'm like, no, I've got the first generation, you know, DS or whatever. So hitting the high points of like what makes this different. They have a second analog nub over on the right above the buttons, which is weird, but that is the placement that they have on the Wii U. Weirdly, it doesn't come with a charger. like the charger, I guess it has.
You gotta buy a new one when it dies.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It's a burner DS. Yeah.
Oh man. Let's see here. And also, you know, aside from that, that little control nub has a better screen, which is to be expected. And also, it is kind of like an upgrade to the graphics processing. So technically there are games like Xenoblade Chronicles or whatever that will require this new extra horsepower, but it's not enough for them to see fit to give it like a new name.
Yeah.
Well, it's the new 3DS.
Yeah.
Honestly, after they went to the 2DS, I was kind of expecting the 1DS.
Where it's just a line. Just an LED game.
Yeah, but what do you do with it? You realize how stupid all these iterations are.
Yeah. Well, the 2DS seemed to...
The easiest game of Pong ever.
It's like a weird little meditation clock. Yeah, like they switch to like micro SD cards and it'll transfer data to PCs wirelessly. But like... If they were smart, what they would do is actually just name this the Super 3DS.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
I was going to go 3DSU, but...
No, because that's what they need to avoid, right? Like, you know, yeah. I can't think of any reason they would do this. Oh, also it has secondary shoulder buttons. It's just a Pandora's box of surprises on these features as I look up and down this list. No, but like, you know, the Wii U suffered from people thinking that it was just an add-on, and they failed to like properly differentiate it as like this new next generation thing. They could actually get some juice on this and justify it as a new product. I mean, yeah, it would be stupid because it would be almost entirely in the name, but like, don't make the same mistake twice by failing to differentiate yourself from yourself.
Yeah, and that's like for the demographic that would be interested in buying that early, they would buy it on the name.
Yeah. And you know, like this, again, talking specifically to this demographic, a lot of which are parents buying these for little kids, and who knows, maybe that is going over to like iPhones as little kids just want to Snapchat pictures of their junk to each other. I don't understand teenagers, guys. It's really scary. You know, but they're going to want to go for the cheaper one, and this the downward pressure that this is going to put on pricing is just going to make it like, oh well, I'm going to get him the cheap one, not recognizing that like, oh, you know, this one actually will play the majority of the games, if that is a difference, right?
Yeah. What percent of kids like that do you think are interested in playing Xenoblade?
I don't know, maybe when they grow up,
maybe.
Yeah. It seems weirdly Apple like this is the 3DS S.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anybody have any thoughts on this, or did I just talk for too long like I usually do?
I picked my handheld horse. I'm happy.
Yeah. I was playing my 3DS earlier today. I like it. It's really nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know. But part of me looks at these, you know, looks at this and sees this this nice cobalt blue one with the SNES colored face face buttons.
Snap out of it, man.
No. There's more stuff that I want to buy. However, I don't know. I don't know. Like, there's a certain amount of like rhetoric around this that is kind of like, well, like, why would they bother making a better piece of hardware? Which doesn't resonate for me and doesn't make a lot of sense. Like, oh, it's not better enough, so why make it? You know, aside from recognizing, like, if somebody was looking to get into the 3DS right now, like, with the crazy good library that it has right now, this would be the perfect thing for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like, it's good that they are continuing to iterate.
Yeah.
And also, this is the first, I mean, aside from the 3DS XL, this is the first real, like, revamp that they've done to the system. Like, I thought that the XL was the 3DS Lite or whatever, but this is the Lite.
You can't be XL and light at the same time. That's well, the science.
Well, the light referred to the quality of the screen. It was just a coincidence that it happened to be smaller. Oh, man. Mm. Jolly, you said that you were boycotting news stories this week?
That's because when David Munn digivolved, it actually froze all of the motion of the Earth, and so all the news stories stopped. So you guys got yours beforehand, but I didn't get mine. Actually, no, that's not the case. I actually do have a little tidbit. This is, you know, my usual time to say something about a game which is related to Kickstarter, because I'm one of those indie people. Wolf, the Red Hood Diaries, was funded, and that is a game that is going to be basically a Little Red Riding Hood that is a platformer. I have the impression that it'll be kind of like American McGee's Alice. Other than that, I don't really have too much to say about it. I backed it because I am working on my own project that has some loose relation to the concept of Little Red Riding Hood. So, you know, like art-wise. So, you know, yeah, that's it. There's a thing. It'll happen. Like, they have a neat little trailer that, you know, gives you a little bit of the vibe of the game, but it's going to be something kind of like the Alice games.
Do they have, like, an expected window of release on that?
I have no idea, to tell you quite honestly. Let me check.
While you're checking, I saw this when you first posted about it, and I was trying to decide what I think, because this is a game that is not in any danger of not happening. Like, I think they were on the ID Xbox, whatever that is, program. And it kind of gotten up on the main stage with Xbox, and it, you know, really, really, they had all the right people behind them.
Yeah.
So this Kickstarter was more for extra junk they wanted to throw into their game rather than anything integral to the game. And I wasn't sure how I felt about that. Like, on the surface, you know, it's, you know, great that, you know, that'll enable them to put more stuff into the game. But at the same time, it's kind of like, you know, if, You know, you don't really need any of this stuff, and probably, you know, the majority of the time, it'll suffer for editing, for, you know, having too much crap in it. I don't know. Any thoughts on that?
Well, part of the problem, I guess, for me is the fact that I've chit-chatted with game devs and, you know, a lot of their funding issues, and, oh, we'd like to do this, but we just don't have the money to, you know, afford the manpower to do this or that, you know, that kind of thing happens. With or without adding more stuff into it via Kickstarter, how many games already have, you know, the patches as soon as they release or right after they release anyway? It's not because it's on a Kickstarter that it has this problem. That's just kind of a game industry-wide problem, I suppose, is what I'm trying to say.
The image I got in my head was from the Simpsons episode where they let Homer completely design a car with every feature that he wants.
It's the Homer.
Yeah, the Homer. And it winds up just being this atrocity that is, you know, no one's happy with.
Yeah. It's got it's got the bubble dome, the separate bubble dome for your kids.
Yep.
The has three horns, one of which plays like a garacha. It has one of those things that lets you find your car. Why don't all cars have those? I can keep going, guys.
Oh yeah. But I guess you know, I'm trying to decide if I think there's anything annoying or whatever about a game who's kind of, you know, they've got what they need, and now they're just asking for extra on top to put on little baubles.
I mean, functionally, what this is is a pre-purchase plan.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's a way for them to get a little bit of the extra juice to get them over the line and, you know, put the last, like, layers of polish onto it, regardless of what other deals that they have. And, you know, to put the power into the hands of, you know, of the fans who just want to say, like, yeah, I'll front you the money. It's cool. I want this thing to exist. Let's make it exist in this form. I think that, Dennis, what you're reacting to without really reacting to it is Star Citizen.
Hmm.
which is just a monstrosity where the, you know, the inmates are running the asylum. And that and that is a case where, because they keep raising millions upon millions upon millions of dollars, they keep on adding new stretch goals for new features, almost all of which are entirely determined by the fans, right? And so, like maybe some of the tension or dissonance that you're feeling is around, okay, so who actually has control over, like, editorial control over what goes into this game? Because damn sure in the traditional model, there would probably be a publisher who was putting it over there. But, like, we're in this weird age right now where no matter what Kickstarter's terms of service are around, like, ownership of a thing that's funded, the fans are going to take ownership of it anyway. And there's a certain amount of pressure to give them exactly what's perceived that they want, right?
The Homer.
Yeah.
I think it's also with a scarcity mindset of, that is, money is being donated to them that could be given to a project that really is in danger of not happening. And you know, people are maybe are backing this thing, which is going to be fine anyway, when they really could be, you know, getting new experiences rather than extra baubles on an experience that you know is going to happen no matter what.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that, because I always have to have something to say. God, that.
So. Dude, this is a fucking podcast. What else do we do?
Sorry, I've been very self-conscious about that lately. I tend to just fucking run my mouth. you know, again, I even forget what I was going to, again, podcast. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I think it's kind of like, okay, can you be upset about Ferguson and ISIS? Why don't I say this in the most hyperbolic kind of way? I think I don't know how scarce, like how scarce it actually is. It's very narrow minded to say that, like, oh, you can't care about both these things at the same time. That said, you know, you have people who are kind of going around. I think it's less of a money problem and more of a publicity problem. You know, like word about this one is getting out, as opposed to these other smaller ones that, you know, may not, you know, merit the attention, but are not getting it.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Fun stuff.
Yeah.
Jala, we hijacked your story.
Yeah.
Oh, I know. That's kind of the idea. I'm supposed to throw it out there and let you go at it. So
and let us choke on it.
Yeah.
Hooray!
Ben, how about you?
Yeah, mine's a sad story, kind of. Mm-hmm. Batman got delayed, which means I have no reason to buy a next-gen console until next year. Yeah.
It got delayed late, too, right?
We're a current podcast. What?
It got delayed late, too, right?
June 2015. So,
oh
yeah.
Just to put kind of twist the knife a little bit. according to Wolf, it says that they're, like, at least on their Kickstarter, it says it's projected to come out what, February 2015. So before.
Well, to be fair, these Wolf guys—they've already completed this game. In fact,
yeah,
yeah, they're just sitting on it. It's a power thing for them.
If you wanted to twist the knife even further, and both of these are going to be finished before The Last Guardian.
Yeah, which I'm not even sure if that's existing. Like they straight up at, like, ahead of TGS, which I think is running right now. Hey guys, it's the 15th anniversary of the Dreamcast.
Hello.
Oh. Yeah, yay. I know. That's the Crystal anniversary. I'm going to buy my Dreamcast a watch, by which I mean a watch battery for my VMU. no, like ahead of TGS, Sony just straight up came out and said, don't look for The Last Guardian. It's not going to be here.
Yeah. Oh, to twist the knife the furthest, Ben, I played Arkham City and didn't like it.
Jeez. I'm ready for my beer now.
Yeah. All right. Let's end this segment. Let's Ben, get your medicine. Everything's gonna be okay.
Multiplayer.
Now it's time for the multiplayer section, where we interact with you, the listeners. Dennis, what question are people responding to?
Sure. We asked every once in a while a franchise will dip its toe into a completely random genre. And the results are always interesting. It's, you know, it's how Mario Kart got started, and Mario Party, and most of the Mario kind of knockoff franchises. What are some of your favorite off-genre games? So games that are kind of in a familiar franchise or setting, but a completely different set of play mechanics.
Yeah. I'll take us right away with David Petreco, who writes, Pokemon Snap. Despite it being a rather short game, I played it over and over with my little brother until our scores were probably as close to the theoretical max as possible.
Yeah, that game is crack cocaine.
Love Pokemon Snap.
There's a WAF for that.
Yeah, there is.
Yeah, there is.
Yeah, it's part of a on-rails shooter suite along with Star Fox. I like Pokemon Snap a lot better than Star Fox. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's pretty great. This is pretty good. I really feel like they're missing an opportunity with Pokemon Snap. To not bring that back. I understand that maybe it wasn't the biggest sales success for them and, people didn't immediately get it. But when you have a system whose theoretical kind of strength is its set of dual cameras and stuff, like do an altered reality, not what is it, altered augmented reality version of that, and you will at least sell some eShop stuff. Like, just give me that.
You know, the Pokemon Snap original one didn't sell well because you could beat the entire game at the demo console.
But at that same demo console, you could take your memory card, put it in there, and then print out your picture of Pikachu on a surfboard. Checkmate. Yeah. Go ahead, Jala.
Well, I was just going to say, that reminded me, once upon a time when I worked in a video store, right next to us, we had a game store. And in the game store, they had the Hey You Pikachu. And it was broken. And this little kid did not know that it was broken. And so this one day, he was just like, Hey You Pikachu! And just like yelling. And of course, Pikachu doesn't do anything because it's broken. And so this kid was like, freaking out, and it was like, for me, because I didn't have to deal with it, I was next door, it was hilarious. But for the people in the game store, I felt very bad for them.
When I worked at a GameStop, there was a kid who would come in and just always play on the demo machine. It was like summer break, and his parents' idea of babysitting was to just drop him off at the mall, as was the attitude at the time. And so our way of dealing with him was just to turn off the TV while he was playing it and say, oh, it's on the Fritz, because otherwise he would just be blocking the entrance by playing Gran Turismo.
Man, that's harsh, man.
Well, we asked him to go.
I know, but I don't know. From my perspective, I would always walk up the street and play games at Toys R Us when I was a kid.
Yeah.
So I have fond memories of that.
They hated you. They hated you so much.
Yeah. So, man.
Yeah. We had a place in my hometown called Video Game Exchange,
mm-hmm.
Where they had, units up. They had actual, TVs and, mm-hmm. with systems plugged in. And the thing was, you could ask them to change the game. So, like, yes, I would love to play blank. And then they just put it in.
That's awesome.
Yeah. But they also hated me because it was the worst. Yeah. Like, it's the worst thing.
Yep. Did you ask them to change the game a lot?
Well, when I was over there, it was right by the haircut place, and when I was waiting, I would go over and say, hey, can you put in Battletoads? And I was like, at first they were like, yeah, go ahead. And I was like, hey, can you put in, what is that one? Not The Empire Strikes Back, Shadow of the Empire. Like, okay, go ahead. And eventually they're like, no, kid, leave. If you're not going to buy something, go away.
Oh, so there's... You were burned, and then you just paid it forward to this poor kid in the mall.
Yeah. If I can't be happy, nobody can be happy.
And
dad.
You're not my dad.
I'm trying to think of kind of a good departure. You have the Hitman Go as the banner image, so I won't use that as kind of the most recent example. That's fine. I'm gonna do a different one. as somebody who played a lot of EverQuest, and got into all the expansions and stuff, at least up to a certain point, playing the Champions of Norrath. Which turned the, proto MMO style of gameplay into a Baldur's Gate-esque hack and slash, was real, real neat. I would say that, it's kind of, that's weird because, EverQuest isn't an established franchise. Yeah, they had a couple of, whatever, but it was like, okay, I know this world, I know exactly where I'm at, and I know what kind of character I'm playing. Like, I can buy into the myth, but I'm playing this kind of, by all rights, far more engaging co-op. Hack and slash with my buddies online, on voice chat. And that was a great way. So I'm going to use that as mine.
Yeah, that's cool.
Jala, what's Sam say?
Sam says Metal Gear Rising Revengeance without question for me. The Metal Gear universe lends itself really well to Platinum's style of third-person action. Also, it's the only game where I immediately bought the soundtrack after finishing it, and I don't even normally listen to emo dubstep butt rock.
Wow, you are making an excellent case for that. For that soundtrack. Emo, yes. Yeah. Dubstep, go on.
I just kind of stopped and I couldn't even pronounce it because I'm like, what?
Yeah, because it's like some eldritch symbols. They're not meant to like signify anything. They like the mind recoils.
You have summoned emo dubstep butt rock.
It looks a lot like the word buttock too.
Yes, it does.
Or it could be he didn't listen to emo dubstep, but he did listen to rock, and there's just not a space there. No,
it's just...
Oh, there's two T's. Never mind.
Yeah. No, he just listens to emo Phillips stand-up records. You see? Yeah. That was my emo Phillips, guys. So we get a little bit of shit for shitting on Metal Gear Solid Revengeance. And I think that...
Wait, we do?
Yeah, so like we make flippant comments about it. Yeah, maybe it's just me because I find the name ridiculous. It's on my Steam wish list, guys. Like, Good.
I was gonna say it's on my Steam wish list too, but actually, yeah, like on the name tip. Yeah, I came across a fighting game. It's Guilty Gear X2, and then it has a hashtag, like reload or something like that. After that, I'm like, what? I mean, I like that series, but what? It has a hashtag. Holo.
Oh, man.
You know, I would have thought that name made no sense about 2 years ago. Totally understand it now. Right. I will just say that much.
What, hashtag reloaded or revengeance?
Revengeance.
Yeah. No, I get it. I think that, you know, all of us have come to in recent years to appreciate the distinct, let's say, emotional state of mind that, you know, desiring revengeance can get, you know, can put us through. You know, it is it was ahead of its time in describing a very modern existential condition. I've never played it. I don't have any particular grudge against it. I love the Metal Gear Solid series. I'm not even like angry that it it's a departure. I think it looks neat. I just like it. It's goofy, and something can be goofy and stupid and good all at the same time.
Oh, yes. Metal Gear games.
Yeah, exactly.
See God Hand.
God, I'm so excited about that.
Oh, it's so good, dude. I started playing it.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, my God. Nice. So much fun.
Yeah, I'm trucking through Half-Life right now to rush to that. I want to get like all of my assignment play done before PRGE so I can just coast.
Cool.
Yeah. Jala, how about you? You have any favorite departures?
Yes, Super Puzzle Fighter. That's kind of related to PRGE. So, yeah. Yes, nice. I like Super Puzzle Fighter. It's a lot of fun. I like puzzle games. I like Street Fighter. I like Super Puzzle Fighter. It's kind of a no-brainer.
Yeah, competitive puzzle games are just so great.
Yeah, and then too, it makes it so much funnier when you've got the little characters interacting with each other. And it's not just Street Fighter. It's, you know, they have Darkstalkers and whatever other random Capcom games have, you know, little cameo characters and stuff. But it's just a lot of fun. And just to see the little characters doing their signature moves and whatnot against each other is the thing that makes that really entertaining. They also had Super Gem Fighter or something like that, but I never actually played that one. Hmm. It was basically a super deformed little chibi version of a fighting game where, I don't know, you fight over gems. I don't know. That's the extent of my knowledge about that. That's it.
I played it at a local arcade with my wife, except we didn't realize it. We didn't realize it at the time. One of the screens was like broken in a way that yellows and greens looked identical. And so I was just like kicking her ass over and over. And I'm like, I don't get it. You know, it's not that hard. You just, you know, match all the colors. And she's like, I don't get this game at all. And finally we realized why I was doing so well. And we switched and then I did not do so well.
One of the screens was in colorblind mode.
Right. It was like in colorblind mode, as in it makes you feel like you're colorblind.
Yes. Thank you.
Sorry, did I just explain your joke?
Yes.
Yeah. I like the idea though that the TV would be colorblind and couldn't perceive color. But
Well, no, the games, some games do have a mode, and it's really awesome when they do this. They do have a mode where colorblind people can play. Like, it does something with the colors to make them distinguishable to their eyes.
Yeah, this was not that. The opposite of that.
Yes. Huh. It's a simulator. Yeah. Yeah. Ben, what does Murph say?
Murph says, bust a move. Match three, snood-like. Spun off from Bubble Booble.
that's the best typo. Thanks, Murph.
I know. Right. I'm very happy that you pronounced the typo.
Yeah. I wasn't. All right. So it should be Bubble Booble.
Hey, journalistic integrity, okay?
And was unusually popular on my freshman hall. Sticks with me. Smack was talked as two fat, cute dino thugs cried and cooed. Dino things.
You're on a roll.
Dyslexia is setting in early. In case no one else mentions it, Warcraft 3 not only made World of Warcraft possible, but also spun off a now giant whole new genre with Dota.
Yeah. I gotta tell you, like, it was crazy watching the Apple event today, timestamping this episode, and them leading, their discussion of the graphical power with a MOBA. I forget the name of it, and it was something stupid. Vainglory, there we go. Like I said, something stupid. And then, like, explaining the MOBA genre to the entire audience. Like, oh, you're trying to go and get this crystal over here, but there are these dudes in the middle, and sometimes it's like, just play the game.
Yeah.
Yeah, bust a move. It's weird because I can't hear about Puzzle Fighter without also thinking of bust a move. So I was biting my tongue because I didn't want to bite Murphy's stees here, Murph's rather. I didn't want to snake his answer. But I think that both of those were like side by side at the go kart and water park place that I went to as a kid. So they're very much in the same breath. Yeah.
And let it be known that I am a Bubble Bobble enthusiast, and I will play through that game, all 100 levels of it, with random, like, all different kinds of people. I am, like, the Bubble Bobble sharer, kind of like how I've dragged a ton of people through Resident Evil 6. It's the same thing with Bubble Bobble, even to this day. So,
it's like Ben, I will get you.
I don't drag people through it. They come to my apartment and play it.
Nice. Dennis, finish us out with Dan.
Yeah, Dan says the Metroid Prime series going from 2D to FPS. It was a while ago, but I remember the move from 3D to first person mode being controversial. As much as I love the 2D games on SNES and GBA, I love the 3D series just the same. Another game I enjoyed, which was a very bizarre off-genre game, was Silent Hill Book of Memories. It features a top-down view and dungeon crawl level similar to Diablo 3, level design similar to Diablo 3, with loot, item vendor, weapon upgrades, and RPG-like level stats to raise. It has more of a co-op emphasis, which is really interesting to me. Sorry, that's my note, but still maintains some of the atmosphere and familiar enemies from the series. I have never heard of that before.
Yeah, it sold like shit and also reviewed very poorly. It seems so misguided to me, but I don't want to, like, it's on my list for Hex Crank, so I'll get to it in 20 years.
It just co-op and Silent Hill seem antithetical to me.
Yeah. Well, I forget. Did we talk about it? Dennis, as the person who listens to this show, did we talk about Alone in the Dark Illumination?
We talked about it being a bad name.
Yeah, we did.
Oh, no, you did. Yes.
did we mention that it is a squad based multiplayer horde mode shooter?
Of course it is. Yes. The discussion was more centered on the name, but
yeah. Well, only the name had been revealed, but like the shit was about to get much more stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Oh man, how about on the Metroid tip? How about Metroid Pinball? And also the oft-overlooked Pokemon Pinball.
I didn't know there was a Pokemon.
Yeah, Pokemon Pinball on the Game Boy Color was great.
Yeah, there was a Sonic, what was that called?
Sonic Spinball, that was terrible.
Spinball, yeah.
There was a pinball level within the Sonic 2 game.
Sonic 1 had Casino Night Zone, and I believe Sonic 2 also had a similar.
All right.
Yeah.
There was also another, just to throw another puzzle game out there, because that's apparently the type of spinoff I like. There was also a Pokemon puzzle game on the GBA. I don't remember what
Pokemon
the title
Puzzle
was.
League. Yeah.
Oh, was that really just okay? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And yeah, that was fun. I liked it.
Oh, Sonic spinoffs that were actually good. Dr. Robotnik's Mean Bean Machine, which was just a reskin of Puyo Pop.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All of these are things. Man, Metroid Prime really, really had a lot of had a lot working against it, and it turned out pretty good. Even though I remember not liking it.
Huh.
Yeah. Mm. I need to listen to that WAF again, but I don't think I've finished it.
Yeah.
Oh well.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Dennis, how about you?
I posted the picture for Hitman Go, which is free for a couple more days, I think, when this comes out. So I think IGN has a link to it. Just Google IGN and Hitman Go, and you can get the game for free. And I think it's normally like $6 or something. But that's it's the Hitman franchise done in like a board game aesthetic, mm-hmm. complete with like actual pieces with bases to help them stand up and everything. It's really, really cool.
We've talked about it before.
Yeah, you played it, didn't you?
Mm-hmm. It's great.
Yeah, I've loved it so far. Starting to get where you really have to kind of think through stuff. It, not so much to beat the main mission just on the page, but to accomplish all the special objectives, which is kind of what the Hitman franchise has evolved towards anyway. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, it's not fun to just kill the person, that's easy, but to do it without being seen or without killing anyone else, or to do it in a special way, or in the case of this board game, in a certain number of moves, is really interesting. Mm-hmm. But the big one, and the one that I'll talk about more in the grind, is Hearthstone. Wow, excuse me. Hearthstone.
Pronunciation episode.
Pronunciation stone, yeah. Which, if I'm, correct me if I'm wrong, but that's based in the World of Warcraft universe. Yeah, so I've been playing a lot of that, and I will talk about that more. But those are two great spinoffs.
There we go. I don't know why, but you talking about time-sensitive, time-limited things shook something loose for me. If you're listening to this right now, there is a Humble Bundle active. It's one of the mainline ones, so you know it's going to be the good shit. Highlights include Gone Home, Gunpoint, Papers, Please.
Oh, snap.
Yeah, and if you pay $10 or more, you get Prison Architect Early Access, which is sweet.
Well, I'm going to buy that for some time in the future.
Yeah. This is the problem you start running into is like, I already own all those things. So
yeah. Or I own most of those except for like one or two of them. But yeah. I don't know, if depending upon the cost.
It's the Humble Bundle problem.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's when people start getting gifts.
Man, if I didn't feel like the gifts were so like valueless, I have a lot. I just have a lot of unclaimed games in my library. So I don't know.
Did Ben? Did you say yours and I just wasn't listening?
Nope.
Oh shit, Ben. Oh, I'm so sorry. I thought that I was interleaving them.
Ben, you were shat on the entire episode. Oh,
I'm so
God.
Sorry.
Where's
wow.
your beer?
It's okay. I have my beer.
No. Go ahead and put yours in. Go.
Okay. So a lot of the ones that I came up with, I'm not really sure if they're like genre defying or not, because a lot of them are just IP that don't really have a defined game genre. But so what I could come up with, Dr. Mario, I think is a solid one. South Park and the Stick of Truth. I'm not sure if it would count or not. Super Smash Brothers. I'm not sure if Mass Effect 3, the multiplayer, would be a genre defying from the main game or not, but if so, I would count that. And then a whole bunch of Star Wars stuff. So like Star Wars Republic Commando, Star Wars The Clone Wars, some of the mini games and multiplayer games they had at the end, mm-hmm. Star Wars Battlefront, and Indiana Jones Point and Click Adventure.
Oh, episode one racer. Hello.
Yeah, I was gonna say the pod racer. I love that, especially in arcade.
Super Bombad Racing.
Oh, I forgot about that.
And then there's also another one. It's like a Mickey and the Beanstalk game. This is from like way long ago, but it was like a puzzle game, but it was a Mickey game, and that was pretty cool.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, that's pretty great actually. That's a this is a Castle of Illusion, right?
Maybe. I don't know. It's
was a separate. Wasn't it a separate game? I seem to. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
I tried Googling the name for about 2 minutes and couldn't find it. So
it's okay.
It features a beanstalk. You go into the clouds each like section of the castle that you go to is a puzzle. You do that, and then you solve one of those number tiles at the end and wake up a giant.
Yeah. This is, oh gosh, Mickey Mania?
Oh.
I believe is what it is called.
Hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh.
But Castle of Illusion is awesome.
Hmm?
Castle of Illusion is awesome. That has nothing to do with anything other than the fact that you mentioned it.
Have you played the reboot?
I own it. I have not played it yet. I kind of have a backlog.
Okay. I'm not sure how faithful it is to the original.
I don't know. I'll find out one day.
Can you clarify what Castle of Illusion is?
Castle of Illusion? It's a Mickey Mouse game from a long time ago.
Oh, okay.
That they re-released it.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. It sounded like you were saying Castle Evolution. Like you know.
Pronunciation episode, I tell you.
Yeah, sorry. I misheard you. Huh. Okay. Well, I'm sorry about skipped you, Ben.
It's all right.
Yeah. It's pretty bizarre because like Star Wars, I think more than any other property has probably been probably has the most diverse genre assortment of any video game adaptation, I guess.
They got a lot of different ones, yeah.
But thank you everybody for writing in, and thank you Dennis for putting this question up. If you would like to participate in this conversation, usually these go up on Tuesday afternoons on our Facebook group, which is facebook.com/TheLevel Podcast. Pregnant pause.
The grind.
It is now time for the grind, where we talk about the games that we have been playing. Dennis, since you have been away, I would like to volunteer you.
Yeah, well, I kind of alluded to it, but I've been playing a lot of Hearthstone. Like a lot of Hearthstone. Like every day, a lot of Hearthstone.
Like doing like daily challenges in it, or?
Yeah, the daily quest and then some every day. I think this is kind of the perfect intersection of, you know, I'm spending a lot of time on a couch holding a baby. And Hearthstone is really easy to play with one hand and half your attention.
Mm-hmm.
And it's free. And I'm learning that I really like deck building games anyway. So it's all just this kind of perfect collusion of things leading to me spending a lot of time with the game.
Mm-hmm.
For those who have been living under a rock, it's a deck building game, free to play, released by Blizzard in the kind of World of Warcraft universe. Only insofar as all of the cards and heroes that you can play and play as kind of have a connection back to that world. So far, I've found that it's really well balanced. And it does not have the feel of there are the pay to win people and the rest of us. I've kind of felt like, you know, any game I've got a chance, as long as I get the right cards, which is really, really cool. And I think there have been several, card deck building games that are free to play that I think that's kind of a genre that thrives on that free to play model because there's that element of randomness that helps level the playing field.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of, you know, the unique thing about, as far as I'm aware, the unique thing about it is that you choose a hero to play as, which is kind of your class. And every hero has a unique hero power, which you have access to every single turn. And then has kind of a unique set of cards to pull from that only that hero can use. So it functions very much as a class system as you're building your decks. And will kind of inform your choice of what normal cards to use based on either you have really good hero cards, and so you use that hero, or you have normal cards that would work really good with a specific hero, so that influences your choice. I have to this point not kind of looked up a guide for how to build a deck. There are kind of standard decks that people work with, and If you watch tournaments, which I've spent a bit of time on Twitch watching people play tournaments for this game as well, they do have standard decks. You'll hear people talk about, I think, a zoo deck or a handlock deck. And I've just kind of messed around and experimented and tried to find combinations based on the cards I have that work well. And I feel like I've been able to do that pretty successfully so far. So it's been a lot of fun from kind of the actual playing the game and then also the metagame of kind of building the deck. I've enjoyed a lot.
How many different kind of hero classes have you played around with?
I've gotten all of the 9 hero classes through all their basic cards, so that, you know, when you start out, you only have 10 special cards per hero, and then you can just get extra cards for them by leveling up 10 more cards. And I've taken all of them through the 10 card range, so I have experience with all of them. I really only play like ranked play with 2 decks, which is the Paladin and the Priest.
Right.
Yep.
Okay.
But it's good times.
One thing that I really appreciate, and I fell off of playing it, and it's hard to get back into it, is how different and distinct the classes feel. Like, I understand that they are kind of just, you know, mostly pre-made decks that I've been playing with, and, you know, they're very, you know, specifically designed, but they kind of evoke the like the strategy that you would expect, you know, about, you know, the difference between, you know, the ratio of attack to defense and stuff like that. That to me, being somebody who doesn't really play a lot of deck building or card kind of games, it was neat to see how thoughtfully considered that was.
Yeah, it really does fit well. Like, the Rogue is all about kind of not having a ton of minions on the board, but having really high spurts of damage from spell cards or kind of surprise cards. Yeah. And then, you know, your warrior card, which is kind of your warrior class, your warrior hero, which is kind of your tank-ish character, I guess, you know, can armor up every game and or every turn, and has minions that are kind of based around getting extra armor. So it all fits together very well personality wise. I also think it has interesting. It has like kind of like 3 examples of how to do free to play, which is like good, medium, and bad, which I thought was really funny to find that all contained within one game. So the good is kind of what it's called, Curse of Nexramas or something like that. It's DLC. Mm-hmm. And you pay a fixed amount, and you know exactly the single player content you're going to get, and you know exactly the cards you're going to get from it. And so it's all a known quantity. You know exactly what you're getting for your money, and you can decide, I want to add that to my game, or I think I want to continue playing without it. And it's all very kind of on the table. So I thought that was really good. The medium is just kind of buying packs of cards, which is, you know, you can buy it with in-game currency, or you can buy it with real money. But what you're kind of buying is a random set of cards. So theoretically you could invest real money and get an entire set of cards completely useless to you. But you know, it's pretty well balanced that you can almost always get the packs or get extra packs through in-game money without ever having to invest. So I can also forgive the randomness from the fact that it's a collectible card game, and that's just kind of part of the nature of the beast. So that's medium. And then the bad is something that's called the Arena. And it had actually been mentioned on a show a while ago. I was talking about how I wish there was a game that would just kind of force you to choose a deck from a random pool of cards and play with that versus, you know, cultivating your own deck over time. Mm-hmm. And someone I forget who, called out, you know, hey, you know, Hearthstone has that, and I've just taken forever to get to it. And it is that, except you have to pay every single time you enter the arena. And it's 150% of what it would take just to buy a new deck of cards. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, it gives you a random pool of cards where you're choosing them, in sets of 3 at a time. So you get offered 3 cards and you pick 1, 3 cards and you pick 1, and you build a deck that way. And then you just fight with the deck that you have, and as many games as you can survive, you get better rewards the longer you can survive. In concept, it sounds cool. In practice, I get demolished every single freaking time. And I don't know if it's just because I'm bad at building my deck or what, but what it is I wind up investing a significant amount of money, or God forbid someone invest real life money for a chance at having a chance at getting a good reward. And that just seems really messed up to me that, you know, it's not worth it. And after the first couple of times doing it, I realized it's really just a money sink, and I don't do it anymore.
Yeah.
So 1 game, 3 different approaches to free to play that work with different levels of success.
Yeah. So, this gets into the let me see here, like the gambling question. So when you say it's not worth it, is it that it's not worth it to you, or that theoretically it, like, this is just a bad value? Because what it sounds like to me is that somebody is kind of paying for the time, like the entertainment of like getting into that, without needing to kind of cultivate their own situation.
Yes, but I think with the knowledge, the time you would have to spend to build up the knowledge and expertise to build a good deck from random cards, to understand, you know, the whole pool of cards that you might see, and then make informed decisions to build a deck that's going to survive past three games. At that point, you might as well just cultivate your own personal deck anyway, you know, versus spending all this time in the arena. Maybe it's like end game shit where like people who have mastered their own decks and want more of a challenge go to it. Maybe I could see that. But for me right now, it's just a very bad investment.
Yeah.
Yeah. So fun stuff. And I will be playing a lot of it. So I've already friended a couple people through the show. There's some weird thing through Blizzard's servers where you have to not only give someone your name, but you have to give them like a bunch of numbers along with your name.
Is it your social security number? Because Dennis, yeah. I think somebody is scamming you.
I knew there was something fishy about that. But yeah, anyway, if you can figure out how to friend me on there, let me know and we'll play together.
Hooray!
Yeah. Anything else?
No, a couple random things, but I'll save them for later weeks.
Okay.
Yep.
Cool. Let's see. Ben, how about you?
So I beat Watch Dogs over the weekend. It was the same as it was up until that point, which was kind of mediocre. But yeah, I don't have to play it anymore. So, but... So, yeah. All right. So that was fun. That was whatever. I dipped a little bit. Do you guys have any questions about it before I move on to something else?
So here's my question, because in my playing it, you know, just kind of like a trickling, nothing really noteworthy to talk about on the show in a grind. The hack your way into this building mission seemed to kind of fall off.
Okay.
Is that something that ever comes back? Because that is something I really liked. I liked being a hacking ghost, you know, in the machine and whatnot. And I was a little bit bummed out, at least in chapter two, that took a back seat. Is that, you know, is that the case where it just kind of goes away, or?
Well, they have like the spots on the map where it's called like personal invasion missions, I believe.
Oh, fun. Oh,
yeah. Very nice.
I wonder if this game is trying to say something,
but it's that sort of thing though, where you hack into a building. That's a cool puzzle mechanic where, like, you have a source of power, and you have it spreads off into different paths, and there's different nodes where they meet up at, and they'll have like joints where it'll be either like a cross valve or like a right angle elbow valve, or it'll be a straight line, and you can rotate it. And so you have to try and direct the power to certain places to unlock those nodes, and then you have to try and unlock like a final node that'll take you to wherever it is in the apartment or whatever. But yeah, super cool puzzle mechanic, but you know, not really meaty enough to you know, make the entire game good, I guess. But yeah, I don't know. So I mean, you can do it as much as you'd like, since they have like the side missions for it.
Yeah,
but I don't know. It's none of the. So okay, so I compare this game a lot to like Grand Theft Auto V and like Arkham Asylum or City, where they have like all these side missions that you can kind of do at your leisure. but the only problem I have with it is I don't feel like there's a lot of payoff to doing those sorts of missions. Like, it doesn't really unlock anything. It doesn't unlock anything substantial. You might get a new gun maybe, or like a new car, but. I don't know. Like, at least with like Batman, you usually get like some sort of story payoff with like the Riddler missions, or like the puzzles are just genuinely fun in the Batman one. Or like with Grand Theft Auto, usually the rewards you get, I feel like, are more substantial, or they kind of, I don't know, make the world more enjoyable. But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. They give you something else to do in the playground, right? Like, here is a taxi that won't flip over.
So I mean, I think the first Grand Theft Auto did it really, really well, where it's like they would add like police bribes to your hideout, or give you a special cab sort of thing, or like Infinite Run or something like that. They like, you know, it made it very much worthwhile, I feel like. But Yeah, but this one in Watch Dogs not really the case.
Yeah.
And yeah, I don't know. It was just a very conservative game, I guess. Like the, you know, bad guys were bested and I, you know, there wasn't I didn't feel like there was a lot there. So, yeah.
Yeah.
How far are you into it?
Probably like a third of the way into chapter 2.
Okay.
Yeah. Not the game stopping running on my machine was a real setback.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Oh, well.
So anyway, one of the things I did after I beat it was went back and looked at different like Easter eggs in Grand Theft Auto 5.
Mm-hmm.
Not in the actual game, but just articles about it. And that kind of filled an empty feeling of what I had with Watch Dogs. Where one thing I didn't know, I don't know if we mentioned this or not on the podcast. Apparently the special edition game for Grand Theft Auto 5, the map would, under a black light, would show some of the locations of like the alien hidden locations or collectibles, and I don't know, things like that. Like, that's well done, that's cool, but yeah. So maybe if I have no other games to play, I might go back and pick up some Grand Theft Auto 5 again.
Yeah,
but we'll see.
Yeah, is that one that you see yourself pushing to Hundo?
I don't know. I did look up what you needed to do it. And it's weird, like where it's like you need to just complete like 40 of these 50 things and then you'll get completion credit for it. Yeah. And you need to do that with like a bunch of different things and then you get 100%. So it's kind of like a weird set of conditions to do it. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that leads back into like weird Symphony of the Night kind of situations where it's not 100%ing, it's 243%ing.
Sounds like an attempt to solve the problem where, you know, it's fun to do those random collectible missions when there's a bunch of random collectibles, but when you're hunting for those last two, it just becomes infuriating.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's the prospect of whether or not to start the entire game over to have a clean slate and do it all in one sitting sort of thing, or to try and eke your way through the current one.
Yeah.
Both are pretty daunting, but yeah. Anyway, in addition to that, I played a little bit of Civ Rev again since I kind of had I had nothing in my backlog except for Dark Souls 2, but we won't talk about that. But
you mean Dark Souls 1?
Dark Souls 1, yes, yeah. Yes.
Are you still on Taurus?
Taurus, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I haven't killed him. Okay. Maybe I'll look up at a YouTube video about it, but I don't know. Who knows? Whatever.
Yeah. Civ Rev, I mean, it's kind of more of the same. That kind of seems to be your go-to comfort game.
Yeah, it's good. I enjoy it. But the only downside is like the strategy is like consistent now. It's like you build two cities, one does science, one does gold. You just max out defense, explore as much as you can before people start killing you, and just beat everybody with a race to the tanks and then overrun the world with tanks. So,
yeah, a world of tanks.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Tanks for days. But, yeah, so that's the only downside with that game is that the strategy does seem to be pretty much set in stone. And so, I don't know. I have a hole now. But hey, I just bought the Humble Indie Bundle, so maybe one of these will run. And, yeah.
Yeah. I think at least Gunpoint should have a pretty good chance of running.
Okay.
Yeah. That's also a really good game.
All right.
Nice.
All right. That's all I got.
Jella, how about you?
Well, the main game that I played a fair amount of was Monster Loves You. It's a super cute indie game where you are a little monster. You are born and you make decisions, which of course affects your growth as you mature and then turn into a full-fledged monster. And then you have the option of dissolving back into the goo pile where all the other monsters came out of, or to become an elder where you can basically either create war between humans and monsters and help one side or the other win, or you can make peace and that kind of thing. It's actually, to run through the entire game takes about maybe an hour, and as you go through it, like, there are new scenarios, new options for you to choose from, you know, new in situations that you encounter, but by and large it gets a little bit quicker after you played it the first time through. It's and almost entirely text-based. It's just, you know, it tells a story. It has little pictures of the monsters that are involved in whatever the mishap is, you know, that you're dealing with at the time is. And you get to make choices, moral choices of some sort, basically leaning you more towards ferocity, kindness, wit, that kind of thing. And then that's how you build your monster throughout each of the stages of the game.
Yeah. This art is just gorgeous.
It's adorable. I love it. I saw it on there because it was a daily deal on Steam. And I was like, this makes me happy. And I'm going to buy this game now. And I did. And then I played through it. I'm like, oh, it's really short. This is exciting. And then, oh my God, I beat it 3 times. Yay. You know, and that kind of thing. But it's actually a lot of fun. And like I said, there's enough variance where it does warrant multiple playthroughs. Like as soon as you play through it once, you will want to go back through and play it again, especially since it doesn't take that long to go through. And you know, I don't know what else to really say about it. It's a cute little game. It's something that's really relaxing to play because it's not Twitch based or anything like that whatsoever. It's all just text, and it's a cute and funny kind of game. So
yeah,
a lot of fun.
It's bizarre because this has been a little bit of a vein that's run through, let's say, the past couple of months of the show, which are this kind of game will pop up first with Long Live the Queen and then with the Yogg, and now this with these scenario driven, very scenario driven and choice driven kind of games that are like Oregon Trail, except, you know, constricted down to, you know, kind of more, base elements. Right.
Yeah. And actually, after I played Monster Loves You, it made me want to turn around and play the Yogg, which I still haven't done yet, but, that's on my list of stuff to do after I play through Monster Loves You some more.
Yeah. Now the Yogg is much shorter than what you're describing.
Oh,
like, it's 15 minute, runs, but you're more likely to see everything, which is nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Huh. So, yeah, I played that. That was the primary thing that I probably spent the most time in.
God, I love a good picture of a monster. Sorry, I'm just looking at a slideshow of all these monsters.
They're awesome. And then I took a bunch, I take incessant screenshots. So if anybody ever wants to see anything that I play, since I'm a console only gamer, just go look at me on Steam. I am Jolichon. I have over 2000 screenshots. I am a screenshot fiend. So you can see anything on there. Anyway, so I played that one. I also played a fair portion of The Night of the Rabbit, which is a kind of point and click adventure game, where you play a little boy who wants to be a magician, who encounters this anthropomorphic rabbit in, you know, full dress, who is a magician, who's a tree walker. And you get basically pulled into this world of, you know, anthropomorphic animals that are all, you know, really cute and kind of storybook looking. And this cute, fun little adventure to become full-fledged magician, because that's your dream. And it's just a really cute little game. It's nothing really to say much about that. I will continue playing it until I finished it. But, you know, I was probably a little bit more interested in Monster Loves You just because adventure games sometimes can be a little tedious. Like, oh, you have to have this thing and this thing. No, you have to put them in this type of combination. And just let me get to the next part. I don't care about all the little fiddly bits, you know? So
did you ever play The Cave?
No, I have not. That's in my list of games in my backlog. So,
yeah.
Gotcha. By the way, fiddly bits, best euphemism for genitalia ever.
Fiddly bits. Oh man, what stripe of adventure games would you liken this to the most? Like, is it straight up cribbing from LucasArts, or is it kind of something that's a little bit more storytelling driven?
I would say it's a little bit more story driven, but you know, not. It's an indie adventure game. I don't know. There's a bunch of different ones out there right at the time. So I don't know. Like this one in particular, it drew me in mostly because of the art and the manner in which they presented it. and it just made me a little bit curious. So then when I actually started playing it, it demonstrates a little bit of charming humor that I like. It's kind of like Monster Loves You in that way, because it does have a kind of cute humor. Whereas in Monster Loves You, it's, you know, kind of violent humor and kind of, you know, zany. In Night of the Rabbit, it's a little bit, I don't know, I guess more British humor.
I mean, it looks like it cribs a little bit from Lewis Carroll to a certain extent. Yeah,
it has that kind of vibe to it, which, again, I got drawn in by visuals and then, you know, have played a little bit of the story. And as I play more of it, I may find myself drawn a little bit further into it than I am right at the moment. There are things that I definitely enjoy a lot about it. And I think with the anthropomorphic animals, too, it also makes me think of Winnie the Pooh, because there's an owl. And, you know, he always has to say, whoo, you know, somewhere in there. So, you know, like they do things like that, which, you know, recalls a lot of different stories that I read as a kid. So God, it does kind of, yeah, it kind of has an indirect nostalgia to it.
I love me a cartoon owl. Give me a cartoon owl talking to a monster and I'll be set.
Well, there is actually, there's the main owl, and then there's, I think it's his niece, this little owl.
Realistic owl.
No, it's an owl with a bow who just kind of pops up in random places when you see him in this little treehouse he lives in. So it's just kind of cute and funny. But and then on the absolute opposite end of the spectrum, I played just the very, very, very beginning of the Thief game, the newer one. Yeah. So,
oh, sure.
So
what do you think of it?
I stopped and then realized that I hadn't played the Dishonored DLC and went and played that.
Sounds about right.
So,
I be careful bringing up Dishonored around here, Jala.
I know. Yeah. I know. Fine. I don't care.
We don't appreciate your kind.
No. Long way from home around here, Jala.
That is fine. I don't care.
Hey, hey. At the very least, I have an ally in this fight now.
Yeah. I don't dislike people who like Dishonored. It's just not my cup of tea.
I acknowledge their right to exist.
We already drove Ben to drink. I think it's fair if he wants to rip me a little. So.
No.
Look, as long as you're off this podcast by sundown, we won't have trouble.
Hey, I'm the one from Texas. You can't do that.
I just picture you, of all the people you would want to give the John Rambo treatment to, like trying to rustle them out of your town for being a vagrant, somebody who likes Dishonored might not be the right way to go. They'll turn into a poof of smoke and jab a blade through your throat.
Well, I hope they enjoy the rats around the city then.
Yeah, they've been doing deep discounts on that Thief game. They really want to sell that. That is a fire sale.
Well, I actually, to be honest, had never played the original Thief game because I was a console gamer during that generation of games. Mm-hmm. And so I bought the original Thief and started playing a little of that, too, just because I was curious about what the differences were. Mm-hmm. And at first, for example, in the new Thief game, it seemed a little bit buggy to me, the interact button. And I realized that in the original game, you had to center the item on the screen and then hit the button. Like, you have to have it direct center. And I'm not accustomed to that because, you know, like, as long as it's within grabbing distance, you can pretty much grab it. But and it seems like that's kind of like a throwback to the original. And that's something that made a little bit more sense that was bothering me when I was trying to play the newer one. So now that I've at least gotten a little bit acquainted with the original game, I'm gonna try to continue on with the newer one.
Yeah, I love me the Thief games, especially 2 and 3 has its moments, but I'm a little bit scared of playing the newest one, Thief 4 or whatever. I have it, but I'm scared of it.
Don't be frightened, Cole. It'll be spooky. Okay.
It couldn't be any spookier than Thief 3. God, ooh, that got really scary at some point.
Ooh, you're making me want to play that now.
There's a specific level that the scenario designer for that specifically cited House of Leaves as his influence.
Oh boy, does
it show.
Does Thief get supernatural, or does it just, you know, is it like hallucinogenic, or?
Yeah, it gets supernatural. It's like a steampunky kind of thing.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I was gonna say I was gonna say Cole. he's developing a tick right now. Anyway. Okay, so I just played the little intro bit and then the first chapter of the game, and when I was going through that, it got supernatural amazingly quickly. I'm like, oh, okay, so that's what this is about. I didn't know.
Pickpocket an alien, yeah.
I mean, no faster than Dishonored.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, that one, I don't know, for some reason, Dishonored, well, first off, you notice that I said Thief Dishonored right afterwards. But then too, I don't know, with Dishonored, I guess it just seemed a little bit more surreal going to it, you know, like, it just basically set itself up as being surreal or having a surreal feel to it when I first started it, so, from the get-go. But with Thief, it kind of was like, oh, okay, I don't know. It kind of took me a little bit by surprise. Yeah, it was a little bit surprising. Like, oh,
they don't put their whale ships up front.
Yeah,
yeah. Like Thief does steampunk in a really good way, in that it sets technology against magic. To me, and in that way, it was a little bit more like a late era Final Fantasy. In that regard, like, you know, Final Fantasy VI, it kind of rests in that same vein. Yes. Magitech, right? Like the two, like one of the big forces is what is it, the Hammer Church or whatever, I forget the specific name of it, but they get into some mystical shenanigans.
Yeah, that was going on.
Yeah,
in the intro bit when they're teaching you all the ropes of how you do a thing
of thievery. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, of cat burglardom.
How you do a thing, Cole.
Yes, it teaches you how to do a thing.
No. How to do a thing.
I don't understand. Is this a reference?
That was how to do a thing sneakily.
What? No, it's tiddly bits.
Oh, tiddly. I can't even. Man. I mean, I was about ready to go to, like, man, why you even got to do a thing, like an Akewood kind of thing, but you just took it in a weird, is that a callback?
No, that was saying how you do a thing sneakily because you're a thief.
Yeah. Okay.
It was not that well planned out. I apologize.
Move forward, Cole. Okay. What have you played?
Moving out of this, I made an allusion to playing a 3DS earlier. I was laying on the couch, trying to get back into the Ace Attorney Dual Destiny.
Uh huh.
Yeah. I like what that game introduces to the series, but I've been stuck on it for about 10 months now because the case that it leads with after your, like, introduction case is probably like the least interesting. Like, I have no point of reference for this. It's about, like, Japanese demon monsters and, you know, people who are dressing up as, like, pro wrestlers trying to, you know, so-and-so to save a village from, like, a provincial, you know, mayordom merging kind of thing. Like, it's just, it's like, ah, God, like, I've literally been on this in, like, the first investigation section where you're just talking to people, like, okay, who's this dipshit now? Like, and so you might ask me, Cole, why don't you just, like, put this down and go away? I feel invested in the series, for one, but two, like, this has happened in the past. Like, you know, it very much does, you know, each different chapter or episode varies in quality and subject matter. So I know that there's probably going to be something cool sitting behind this based on what I've heard about it. But man, is it just a slog at this point?
Well, then go get a wiki or something or a FAQ and just plow through it and then let go.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. Like, I mean, I just got to the first trial section and that's when stuff picks back up. But, like, when I say just got, I mean, I fell asleep during the last talking bit. Well, I was also exhausted from working today. So that was the other side of it. But I don't know. And, like, as they're introducing more characters and as they try and, you know, build this in, the Ace Attorney, like, the Phoenix Wright games started out as, you know, kind of their own goofy thing. And, like, yeah, it was a visual novel and yeah, it was anime, but it felt kind of more of a whole. I feel like there's a little bit of anime slipping into it. And by that, I mean, like, they're setting stuff up, you know, like the attorney profession, they may as well be wizards at this point. And, like, each of them has their own little quirk and it's like they all went to the same high school. Like you could see this, like Ace Attorney, the law school days, and now it's a dating sim. Like it's a little bit goofy in that regard.
And then they're all pigeons, and then it's Hatsukawa.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even that, like, okay, if they're like, oh, law pigeons, great, let's do this. Right.
If they have hats, they need hats.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but what's weird is even though they might as well be, you know, wizards, this also introduces little things you can do in, you know, like in the investigation and in the, cross examination. They bring back Apollo Justice, whose thing is he can pick out tells, which is it takes everything into slow motion. And instead of just cycling through a transcript of what they're saying, it's like you pick a statement. And then you can like zoom in and you have like a really like hyper magnified view of them looking for the part of their body that's like twitching or tapping based on what they're saying. And you can actually draw in on the exact thing that's making them nervous at that moment to get like a better, you know, like a better testimony. So it's like a pay attention to the differences kind of sim, you know, and also kind of like knowing, okay, this actually, I know something is wrong here, but I don't have any evidence, but I can't get them by just pressing. I need to press on a specific thing. So that's an interesting wrinkle into this. Additionally, they have somebody whose name, I forget it. It's like Athena Sykes or something like that, who has a little locket that can read people's specific emotions. And that actually helps you figure out how to respond to them in a way that will, again, get them to reveal more of the situation. So, like, it's bringing more texture into what used to be just look for the logical, you know, or the factual inconsistency or contradiction in, you know, in this into more of a, like, all right, so I know that there's something here, but it's not like A to B to A to B. Like a correlation, like it's not just all relying on the evidence, and that's neat. But kind of the narrative craft that builds up around it, it's a little bit like up its own ass to a certain extent.
Hmm.
Yeah,
they've run out of good writing, and so that now they need, gimmicks to uncover stuff.
Maybe. I don't know, and it's funny because there hasn't been like a decline. In fact, over the original trilogy, like the quality of the writing actually like ramped up. So yeah. I can't cite it's been headed this way in a long time. And I wouldn't say any of it's specifically like egregious. Like it's all, if you're tolerant of that tone and if you're tolerant of visual novels in general, you'll be fine. It's just, I don't know, weird.
I guess it's more like instead of having to actually put in the mental work of, you know, laying the clues out and having it actually all go together in a surprising or interesting way, now they can just kind of gate stuff behind finding the right emotion.
Maybe, but there's like a little gameplay challenge around that. Whereas, like you can look up solutions for these, but previously it was kind of the adventure game version of just rub everything together. It's like, hey, press every statement and hope that something comes out, and then present every piece of evidence at every statement and hope something comes out. Like, right. You know, like it ended up being like, you know, adventure game by friction as opposed to this, which, you know, when played right and when you're engaged with it, you know, it becomes adventure game by intuition.
That not is adventure bad, that, game by exhaustion.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, I did fall asleep while I was playing it. So who knows? I was a sleepy boy today. I don't know. So moving off of that, a listener gifted me a copy of Five Nights at Freddy's.
Of what? Okay. What?
Has alliteration.
There we go. Jala, have you heard about this? This seems like something you would have heard about.
Yeah, David has chatted with me a little bit about it, but I have not really poked at it much.
Okay, so it's real cool. It is a horror game. And I would kind of liken it to a modern retelling of Night Trap.
Huh.
So the premise is you're a dude who is kind of taking on a job as a night watchman at a family fun center like a Chuck E. Cheese. Okay. And you're posted up in this room. It's your, you know, it's your security room, and the people who run this place are incredibly negligent insofar as they don't give you unlimited power. You just have, you know, a battery that lets you do a certain number of things every turn. And also the animatronics, even though they can walk loose, they tend to get weird at night and start wandering around, and they get violent in the form of, if they see a human there at night, they will think that it is an endoskeleton that is without its suit. So they will pick you up and put you in a suit, and it will kill you because it sieves all the skin off your bones, leaving only your eyes and teeth.
Well,
oh my gosh.
Yeah. So your only real explanation for what's happening is kind of like these phone calls, like answering machine messages left for you at the beginning of every night. And you have to survive, you know, 5 nights at this place. I've only gotten into the second night because it gets really difficult. And the gameplay kind of comes from switching through these cameras. So there, you know, you have this little overhead map that shows you which camera you're looking at, and watching for one of these, I think four or five animatronic monstrosities as they kind of like wander around. And when one is getting close to you, you have to either turn on the light in the hallway to spook them off or close the door. Switching your camera view, turning on the light or closing and locking the door all consume energy. And if you run out of energy, well, there's Freddy, or there's one of them there to rip your skin off and put you in a suit. The thing is, as you're kind of cycling through your cameras, there are jump scares that happen, and not just like the, hey, something is screaming in your face. And when that happens, oh boy, I thought I was inured to jump scares, guys. But like, I kind of had to like step into the other room for a minute and like wash a dish. Because they bring it to kind of a form of art. But there's also
they have an entire trailer for this thing that is just people's reactions to the jump scares.
Yeah, it's a little bit obnoxious because streamers have latched onto it as like a, I don't know, it's like a PewDiePie thing or whatever. Like, oh, here is just a reaction cam of me playing it. And I get the sense that they're kind of hamming it up. You saw this a little bit with Let's Plays of Amnesia. Like, how loud can I scream over this thing? That's like, yeah, it's scary, but it's probably not like sobbing and cursing my mother and God scary. You know, but yeah, it's pretty spooky and like, oh yeah. But there are also like these more subtle kind of scares as you're kind of figuring out what's going on, because they will just be looming. Like, if they're not in the foreground, you'll just see a figure looming in the background of a shot, like out of any direct light. But like, as the camera pans, you will see like a little glint come off of their eye. I'm like, oh, there's one right there. Okay. And you're trying to keep track of where all these are at. And if you're doing like a circuit around the various cameras, you'll see like signs that one of them was there or one of them, you know, has been through the area. None of them move when you're watching them.
Huh.
So the strategy becomes trying to figure out like, okay, he's making a circuit from this place to this place. Or, you know, I know that if I'm not finding him here, I need to look for him over here. Otherwise, he's coming right for me. And so that's kind of the strategy and the gameplay portion of the game is trying to figure out like what each of them is up to. And they're all different animals and they all kind of behave in different ways. And Freddy himself is the, you know, kind of the big boss whose behavior is a little bit more erratic. But there will just be these subtle jump scares where something will just be like, oh, that's subtly out of place. And like, oh, the implication behind that is really upsetting.
Huh.
Yeah.
This is, it's almost kind of, I've never seen this strategy heavy a horror game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it gets like much more complicated. Like, I couldn't get past night two just because there's some stuff I've not been able to figure out. But it starts introducing, you know, putting more of them in play. And what's weird is my understanding is after you beat the main campaign, you get a level design, like a map editor, except with that, you know, you can't change the layout of the restaurant. But what you can do is change the AI on the animals. And I guess that those are shareable.
So I wonder if it's like always solvable or if you can find a way to change the AI to make it, you know, impossible to beat.
I mean, if it just runs for the door and it does so quickly that you can't react to close it. Yeah. It's interesting. A listener gifted this to me, and I've been frantically searching back through my Facebook messages, and I'm very sorry. If I find this detail, I'll put it in the show notes, at least your first name. But thank you, kind listener, for sending me a code for that.
Steam is really crappy about showing you who has given you gifts.
Yeah.
It's I've had that problem before.
Yeah. So thank you, mysterious stranger.
Yeah. Watch out, he has a gun.
Oh no. He's got nothing to lose. Oh man. Yeah, it's pretty fun. Any questions about that?
Not about that, but I was going to say, do you know if anybody ever picked up the Mighty Gear Vault, speaking about codes and giving away things for free? That was the game that I had a code for the 3DS, and I had posted it on the episode.
I have no idea.
Pocketed it.
No.
I've found, because I've posted some codes to the Facebook page as well, those tend to disappear to people who never actually come back and say anything about it.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so, I was just wondering. Yeah. I hope whoever got it likes it, because and thanks.
Yeah.
So,
in the future, what we'll try to do is kind of have something where they have to message you or something like that to get it.
Yeah. We want to boost engagement.
Well, we also I don't know. I think I got on somebody's list that's just kind of like a code snatching thing. So
gross.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have one last one, real quick, before we go.
Go.
Is that cool? Yeah, this is desert golfing.
Oh, I heard people tweeting about this. This is, yeah. I was not aware it was a game.
It is.
I thought people were golfing in the desert.
Yeah. It's.
How does that work?
Slowly.
Yeah. Very it's slowly. All one big sand trap. So I heard about this on Video Games Hot Dog, and they've talked about it. For a couple weeks now. Does it sound hyperbolic if I call it transcendent?
Yep.
Okay.
Wait, is this an iOS game? Yes. Or a okay.
Yeah. Sorry, I liked how quickly you fired that off.
Well, I was gonna say this is a golf game, so I'll have to agree there. Not so, a golfing fan.
So it's side scrolling like Super Sick Man Golf. Instead of having like a shot meter where you're timing it out, it's almost like a pool game where you draw, like you set your finger on the glass and then you draw it back a certain distance. And that distance and the angle determines the velocity of your shot. Mm-hmm. It is theoretically without end. It is entirely procedurally generated, and the holes get more chaotic as you kind of go along. So I'm on hole like 150 or something right now. Mm-hmm. It sucks a little bit because I'm going back and forth on my iPad and my iPhone, both of which they don't keep in sync. So it's two separate games, and there's no par. You just have kind of your total number of shots that you've taken. And so go ahead.
Is this procedurally generated as in everyone's course is unique, or as in it's kind of all on the same seed and it'll just keep on going forever?
I'm not entirely sure. I couldn't speak to like if my experience is the same as somebody else's, but like from my understanding is that it is random. Like, it, you know, maybe there are certain rules that it adheres to. And like I said, it ratchets up in complexity. So there's something that is kind of progressing as the hole counter kind of ticks up. I don't want to spoil anything, but I hear around hole 300, there's a cactus.
Oh, no, I'm not going to play
it. Worthless. Yeah, but it's like, I don't know. It serves exactly the role that I want an iOS game to serve, which is a brief 30-second to 2-minute reprieve as I just kind of pick it up and get presented with these new situations that are both kind of a test of, you know, whatever dexterity this requires, but also, you know, very basic problem solving of like, okay, how do I make this approach, right? And the idea that it goes on and on without end is what makes me, you know, call this transcendent in a certain way, which is out of the monotony, there are these cool little moments. And they talked about this on Video Games Hot Dog, and I was skeptical of it until I kind of felt it a little bit myself. You know, you have just kind of these long stretches of something, you know, not particularly, you know, new or out there, but there is a specific combination or a specific angle of shot, which brings up something that I feel a lot when I do real golf, which I don't do enough anymore, which is you get that one shot that keeps you coming back.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so, like, it does something weird enough that, like, gives it this, you know, weird I'm saying weird too much now. It gives it a texture that you wouldn't expect from, or you wouldn't even be able to expect from something that is as, you know, kind of designed or bespoke as Super Stickman Golf, right? There are no power-ups. There are no real gimmicks aside from just different angles and different slants and different elevations that everything is at.
That's awesome. I think that a large part of the, not addictiveness, that's a bad word for it, but like the moxie of iOS games is the capability to do that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And kind of and be able to kind of just come to it whenever and know you're going to get something that's just small, but, you know, will always be there.
Yeah. If it wasn't a distraction behavior, by which I mean something that I did to silence my own thoughts, I would almost call it a meditative experience, which is, you know, something that play does a very good job of sometimes, which is giving you something to do with your hands and something to like look at with your eyes while your head kind of works on whatever it's going to work on.
Yeah. You
know? Yeah. It's like a little bonsai tree, except with golf.
And a single cactus somewhere.
Maybe it gets like, oh man, I don't know if I would love it or if I would hate it if they slowly like brought it into different terrain. Like maybe around a whole 1500, there's like it starts snowing.
It's really more of a Zen garden. You just get a rake.
It's like Journey.
Yeah, that's almost exactly what came to mind. Yeah, it's also just $1, so nobody has any excuse. Unless they don't have it. I don't know if it's available off of iOS, but yeah.
So there.
Yeah. That's that's it. I feel good that I've actually played games this week.
Yay!
We did it, guys. Want to button it up?
Do it.
Sure. That was level number 75. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening. And thank you, Jala, for joining us again.
Thank you,
Ben. And thank you, Dennis.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mostly Ben. Forced.
What was forced?
Nothing.
No. I don't know. I thanked one person, then I realized, you know what? This actually is something that you guys make time out of your lives to do, and I really appreciate it. So I wanted
We get it. We're last year's model. That's cool.
Okay. Cool. Yeah. No. One of you is silver. One of you is gold. Okay.
Fight to the death to find out who is who.
Fight for my love. What are we thinking of here? What can you do? If you're listening to this on Friday, there is still time to vote in the Watch Out for Fireballs Autumn Adventure Game poll. Any of the Patreon backers have the ability to do that. The options are I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream, Riven, the sequel to Myst, Sanitarium, and Grim Fandango. I'm looking at the results page now, and it is still very much anybody's race. Even though my preferred one had a very commanding lead at the start, and now another one is creeping up on it. I want to keep it a secret ballot here.
Hush hush, yeah.
Hush hush. Yes.
You don't want to influence the results.
No. But yeah, so that is duckfeed.tv/Patreon. Support the network, support that show, support this show. I know that people who listen to this like adventure games, and any of these are going to be good discussion fodder. But for this show, it's been a little while since we've gotten an iTunes rating or review. So if you're a new listener who has not hopped up on that, it's very much appreciated. It does help us out, not just for ego bucks, but for whatever black magic happens behind iTunes scenes. Then the Facebook group, facebook.com/the level podcast, and the good old fashioned telling a friend.
Mm-hmm.
Did I miss anything, guys? Jolly, where can people find you?
They can find me at neonskystudio.com or on Twitter at JalaShot. Just for you, Ben. Just for you.
I'm saying this from outer space.
You know you're going to have to do it again at the end, right, Jala?
No.
Okay, cool. Well, since you forced
me. I'll screw it up that way.
Since you forced my hand, I've been Cole Ross, at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been Dennis Furia, at D Furia on Twitter.
I'm Jala Prendes. You can find me at on around through Twitter.
Twitter. It's like Tron. I am inside of Twitter.
She permeates it.
That's right.
Hashtag duck.
Seriously. Well, seriously, though, I have several of them. I have Jolichon, which is, you know, my personal one. I've got Neon Sky Studio. And then I also have Sailamore, which is for my comic, which they're the Waffle, the mascot mm-hmm. for Watch Out for Fireballs, showed up on the last page of my comic yeah. last week. So you guys need a mascot.
Sorry, we've got that little guy on our logo.
He's not cool enough.
Yeah, he's just a bathroom guy.
We can't beat Waffle.
The mascot will find us. We don't find the mascot.
Yeah, yeah. We have to speak through it. It's like sculpture. Our mascot will be inside the marble. Yeah. Yeah.
And then we can't forget Ben.
We can't
ben
forget
Ben. Merkelizer on Twitter.
there we go. I don't have a title, but I want to have everybody stick around anyway for our deliberation. Good night.
Fiddly bits! Fiddly bits!
Yeah, that seems like a no-brainer.
There's no brain in fiddly bits.
can I present you with the alternatives?
Oh, sure. Well, you can do it if you want. I mean,
no, I want to present you with alternative. I don't care.
Sure.
A failure simulator. Pronunciation episode.
That's a good one.
And yeah. Fiddly bits.
Hmm. That is the best one, though.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Fiddly Bits.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Not to take away from any of those other titles. This is just one standout.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Am I about to watch somebody die, Ben?
Nah, probably not. Not on camera, at least.
Probably not.
not viewed in camera. Whatever.
Yeah. Oh, God. It's like the Earth decided to stop holding him.
It's, yeah, that's a fun feeling to watch that and feel, oh.
Well, it goes yeah. right into slow motion. You can see yeah. watching him grasp in vain at the seat.
Oh, my God. The Mr. Freeze boss fight was a masterpiece, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Agreed.
Huh. Are you going to talk about that in a grind, or are you?
No, I'll let that be my mention because I really don't have anything meaningful to say about it other than it was meh. I liked the Mr. Freeze boss fight, but felt no compulsion to play beyond that. So,
yeah.
Huh.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
It is. So the one thing that's weird about Arkham City, since we won't talk about it in the grind, we can just decide it here.
Let's spend 6 hours on it now, off air.
The one thing that's interesting about it is, like, so one of the driving or one of the coolest things about the first game, Arkham Asylum, was the fact that it was like a small, intimate setting. Mm-hmm. And they decided to go completely against that with Arkham City, making it, you know, open world, yet still making it somewhat intimate, you know.
And if you're going to go open world, it has to be fun to get around that world. And it's wicked not.
You don't like that?
No, it's like all the worst parts of Assassin's Creed that just... You know, it's everything is too spaced out for just like running there. The running is very slow and sloppy and not fluid. Mm-hmm. The gliding, I could never really feel like I was in control of. It always felt like it was just on a direct line to the closest surface. Okay. And the way they did the mini map of it kind of just pointed you in a direction, but I never had a sense of place for like okay. where I was in the city and where I was trying to get. I was just following a marker on my compass and was always annoyed when there was a big building in the way and I'd mash R1 until I was on the top. And then, you know, it was very mindless to get from place to place. I would say.
See, we didn't want this to turn into discussion. Maybe this will be post-roll. I don't know. Yeah. I felt like, they trickled out enough like upgrades to your mobility that, you know, my ability to get around kind of like rose with the curve of where it was expecting me to go. And also, you know, the tools that it was giving me.
Yeah. Right? I almost exclusively took combat upgrades. So that could be the case.
Yeah. Like the, eventually like the whole, okay, I'm going to dive bomb and then rise up higher somehow. Mm-hmm. like
physics. Bad physics.
I would love to see a comic where any incongruency or plot hole that someone points out about Batman shouts down just by yelling "Bat physics."
It's just bat whatever. I thought that was neat. Like, I felt like that was a skill that it was trying to teach me, and eventually through doing those ring challenges I just straight up mastered it.
Yeah, so what did you think about the side missions?
Surprising interruption. Like, I'd be on kind of the critical path and find a Zaz phone, and which would take me completely to the other side of the city. But then I didn't feel like there was anything meaningful for me to do after that, except wander back to the critical path. Yeah. And I think, you know, side missions work when you can kind of chain them together. And it's like, oh, now there's always something new and exciting. And I didn't feel like it was dense enough to really have that effect.
Okay.
Yeah.
What did you think of the Mad Hatter mission?
I didn't get there. I only played up to Mr. Freeze.
Oh, okay.
I asked if there's any other bright spots that I should work towards. I'm open to it. But
so wait, did you not beat the game?
No, I played up to Mr. Freeze and then was done.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, there's some parts of it that I could see arguments lobbied against it as just being kind of perhaps over the top thematically. But, you know, I the part I'm thinking of is like the both the bottom and the top of the tower, like both those areas being a little bit weird, like the world of past or whatever. But
yep.
I don't know. Even if I don't like if it's not my cup of tea, I do appreciate like their commitment to their style of like the Batman. So that's kind of how I interpret it, I guess. So.
Yep.
Cool. Let's keep going.
All right.